Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu eurem Lieblings-KI-Podcast, dem AI Melange aus Wien. Kaum machen wir eine Woche Pause, steht die AI-Welt wieder Kopf. Denn OpenAI mischt den Markt wieder mal ordentlich auf, nicht zuletzt mit der eigenen neuen Consumer-App namens Sora. Der Markt bekommt dadurch eine ganz neue Dynamik und die Internet-Bubble stellt sich natürlich die Frage, ob die vielen Milliarden Investitionen dazu gut waren und sind, um letzten Endes die AI-generated Videos zu produzieren. Natürlich nicht, heißt es als Antwort. Natürlich basteln gleichzeitig viele Wissenschaftlerinnen weltweit an Experimenten und Lösungen für größere Probleme der Welt. Das war zum Teil auch bei der TED-AI-Konferenz letzte Woche in Wien zu spüren und gab uns natürlich die Hoffnung und natürlich viele Infos und Updates, wie die AI-Transformation eigentlich global von sich läuft und wirksam ist. Auch mich lassen diese Fragen alles andere als kalt, denn jede AI-News hat auf einmal schärfere Kanten. Jede positive Geschichte, vielleicht doch irgendwie viele negative, unbeabsichtigte Konsequenzen. Die unglaubliche Kraft der Technologie bedeutet vielleicht nun wirklich, dass viele Skills von heute auf morgen nicht mehr gebraucht werden. Auf der anderen Seite können dadurch hunderte neue Ideen entstehen. Es ist alles ein wenig kompliziert und komplex geworden. Daher freue ich mich umso mehr, dass ich jede Woche in diesen AI-Melange-Gesprächen bestimmte Themen und Ideen in der Tiefe durchleuchten darf und aus erster Hand mit den Menschen spreche, die sie verantworten und tatsächlich für sich auch Lösungen gefunden haben für diese Komplexität. Für heute und für das Thema Komplexität habe ich einen sehr besonderen Gast bei mir. Jemand, der seit Jahrzehnten es schafft, eben diese Komplexität zu erkennen und sie in den Mehrwert für die Kunden zu kanalisieren. Er ist jemand, der für eine der verbreitetesten Services des Landes, nämlich George Banking, verantwortlich ist und er ist de facto sein Gründungsvater. Mittlerweile verantwortet er auch die ganze Technik der Erste Group in Österreich. Er ist gebürtiger Italiener und auch seit vielen Jahren in Österreich wirksam. Herzlich willkommen, Maurizio Poletto.
Hi Anna, nice to see you.
Wir werden gleich ins Gespräch mit Mauri gehen, aber zuvor wie immer ein kleiner Überblick der wichtigsten Entwicklungen der letzten Woche. Was habt ihr verpasst oder vielleicht doch nicht verpasst, aber was ist wichtig zu wissen? Heute wieder so 3 bis 4 News, die wichtig sind. Wie zu Beginn schon erwähnt, OpenAI dominierte wieder die News und schaffte es übrigens dadurch auf eine Bewertung von 500 Milliarden Dollar. Und ist somit das wertvollste Unternehmen auf der Welt im Privatbesitz. Auch wertvoller als SpaceX zum Beispiel. Also OpenAI hat zuerst das Videogenerierungsmodell Sora 2 veröffentlicht, welches so in der Filmbranche, in der Content-Produktionsfirmen wirklich für Unmut schon gesorgt hat. Man hat ja auch von AI-generated Hollywood-Schauspielerinnen gelesen. Und kurz darauf wurde auch das Ganze nochmal verschärft, dadurch, dass eine eigene App namens Sora gelauncht wurde, welche nun TikTok, Insta-Reels und YouTube-Shorts die Stirn bieten soll. Und gestern Abend wurde dann bei den Developer Days oder Dev Days, wie es OpenAI nennt, noch eine weitere technische Neuigkeit vorgestellt. ChatGPT soll zum App Store werden und die Entwickler bekommen eine Apps-SDK, also wo sie selber die entsprechenden Apps programmieren können. Tatsächlich wurde auch ein Agent-Kit-Tool vorgestellt für die Developer, womit Agenten also entwickelt werden können und somit die Anwender auch viel leichter an diese Agenten kommen können. Und das Sora 2 Videomodell und ein aktualisiertes GPT 5 Pro wurden in die APIs aufgenommen. Also das sind auch die technischen News. Also alles in allem tut sich sehr, sehr viel. Die Konkurrenz schläft natürlich auch nicht. Perplexity hat den eigenen Browser Comet gratis den Usern zur Verfügung gestellt. Viele von euch haben diese Mail bereits bekommen und vielleicht auch den Browser runtergeladen. Claude, also von Anthropic, hat Sonnet 4.5 Punkt gelauncht und weiter die Führung bei den Programmiertasks verfestigt. Denn das neue Modell kann bis zu 30 Stunden selbsttätig programmieren. Es ist ziemlich ziemlich wild. Und last but not least, natürlich auch die vierten im Bunde, Google, hat sich gerade vor ein paar Stunden mit einem neuen Modell gemeldet namens Gemini 2.5 Computer Use, welches dann entsprechend, wie wir das auch von anderen Anbietern kennen, selbsttätig einfach Dinge im Browser und am Computer für den Anwender und Anwenderin erledigen kann. Angeblich funktioniert das neue Modell zu 50% besser als die Konkurrenz. Das können wir alles noch nicht überprüfen. Wir haben noch keinen Zugang in der EU. Und somit müssen wir ein bisschen warten, um zu sehen, was das wirklich kann. Was wir schon nutzen können, oder zumindest sehr, sehr, sehr bald nutzen können, zumindest heute in der Früh konnte ich es noch nicht nutzen, aber heute kam die Meldung raus, dass Google auch nun in der EU, also auch in Österreich, den KI-Modus oder den AI-Mode gelauncht hat. Das heißt, dass die Google-Suche jetzt nicht nur mit den AI-Overview als Antwort gestärkt wurde, die man bereits schon kennt, sondern dass eine komplett neue, rund um die KI aufgebaute Suchmaschine jetzt die klassische Google-Suche eigentlich ersetzt. Also auch komplett ohne die klassische Linkliste sozusagen. Es handelt sich also um Googles Pendant zu bestehenden KI-Suchmaschinen wie Perplexity oder ChatGPT Search. Und wie gesagt, ich habe es noch heute noch nicht austesten können. Bin schon sehr gespannt auf meine Erfahrung, aber auch auf eure Erfahrung und auf euer Feedback dazu. Wird sicherlich weiterhin das Thema des Traffics im Internet verstärken und verschärfen, und ich bin schon sehr gespannt auf die Diskussionen. Beenden möchte ich die News noch mit einem letzten, eigentlich ganz spannenden, nicht mehr ganz so frisch, es ist glaube ich 10 Tage frisch, eine Datensammlung, also von einer Studie kann man nicht wirklich sprechen. Es ist de facto ein neues Benchmark, das von OpenAI vorgestellt wurde und das auch eingeführt wurde zur Bewertung der Leistungsfähigkeit von KI-Modellen für reale, wirtschaftlich wertvolle Aufgaben. Die haben das als wissenschaftliche Studie formatiert. Das fand ich auch ganz interessant, dass man das so veröffentlicht. Aber wie gesagt, es ist einfach ein Versuch von OpenAI darzustellen, wie die KI-Modelle sich sozusagen nicht nur mit mathematischen Aufgaben tun, sondern auch in echter Welt durchschlagen. Und was ist passiert für diesen Test und für diese, sage ich, Studie unter Anführungszeichen, versammelte OpenAI Experten aus somit durchschnittlich 14 Jahren Erfahrung aus Branchen wie Finanzen, Recht und Einzelhandel, und es ließ sie realistische Aufgaben entwickeln, für deren Bearbeitung menschliche Experten durchschnittlich 4 bis 7 Stunden benötigen würden. Anschließend ließ OpenAI sowohl die KI-Experten als auch andere Experten die Aufgaben selbst bearbeiten, und eine dritte Expertengruppe bewertete die Ergebnisse, ohne zu wissen, welche Antworten von der KI und welche von Menschen stammten. Dieser Prozess dauerte etwa 1 Stunde pro Frage. Und die menschlichen Experten gewannen, also sie haben bessere Ergebnisse geliefert, allerdings nur knapp, denn die Margen variierten wirklich je nach Branche erheblich. Also die KI hat circa 70% erreicht. Das heißt, es fehlt nicht mehr eigentlich viel, bis die KI bestimmte Aufgaben komplett lösen kann. Und das Spannende daran ist, dass natürlich dass nicht Halluzinationen und Fehler der Hauptgrund für den Sieg der Menschen gegenüber der KI waren, sondern die mangelnde Formatierung der Ergebnisse oder die mangelnde exakte Befolgung von Anweisen. Und das sind eigentlich Bereiche, in denen wir sehr rasch Verbesserungen sehen werden. Also bedeutet das, dass die KI bereit ist, menschliche Arbeitsplätze zu ersetzen? Nein, zumindest nicht bald. Aber wird sie sehr bald bestimmte Aufgaben ersetzen? Davon können wir mittlerweile wirklich ausgehen. So viel zu diesen spannenden News der Woche. Und jetzt, wie besprochen, gehen wir in das tolle Gespräch mit meinem heutigen Gast. Maurizio, did you welcome again to the show? And just to ask you, did you read about the latest study of OpenAI about the impact or kind of the quality of the replacement of AI for certain skills, for example, like in the financial industry. Did you read this study or did you come across it?
No, I didn't read the study. I didn't even know it existed. Now you tell me, I will definitely... First, I'm going to ask you to send it over to me.
Yes, I will share it.
And I will definitely... It's going to be my weekend readings. Honestly... It's great. I'm sure it's great. It's probably nothing new in there. We know what AI can do great, and what is only maybe it will do, and what is can be done tomorrow. I'm myself using it very much, and I know exactly what it can do perfectly. But please share the studies. I'm definitely going to read it. Yeah,
it's interesting that now they introduce this kind of a new benchmark around. How valuable the AI is for the real world, not only for solving of PhD mathematical tasks. But yeah, of course, I will share it to you, with you, and I will share it also publicly with the audience. But let me start also with something I remember we spoke about around 2.5 years ago when we met. I think I asked you something in the we need to hurry around AI topic. Really, we need to be very speedy to get it on board. And you said, no, Haryana, this topic is not going anywhere. We have a lot of time about it. And I thought it was kind of cool and visionary for back then, 2.5 years ago. And I think time proved you definitely right. So on that hand, you were right. On the other hand, the speed has also increased enormously. So how do you feel about the urgency of the topic today?
Pretty much the same way I felt 2.5 years ago. I think that it's a fantastic industrial revolution we're experiencing right now. Compared to past situation, I think it's similar to the web. Mm-hmm. You remember the revolution of the web, 1998, 1999, 2000, and then the 2000 bubble, right? We are a bit of a 1999 situation right now, I believe. So the bubble is growing. There is a likely chance that this will burst, it will explode, which is there is the best thing ever, because then lots of this dust will settle and the real thing will stay. But AI is here to stay, and it's great. I'm very, very excited about it. So I think it's the normal evolution. The difference is that it's gonna accelerate much faster than the AI stuff. Than the web stuff.
Mm-hmm. Back in the days.
Yeah.
Would you, if you would, were to make a kind of a bet today? What kind of innovations do you think will stay from anything that we're seeing at the moment? We see, you know, the change of the way we search. I just talked about the new AI mode. I know the change of how we interpret intent also online from the customers. Meta has said, you know, they started using the chatbot conversations for advertising. There's all these agentic capabilities. So there's a lot of turmoil everywhere. What do you think will stay with us?
There is no one thing, there are many things. So I think what it will stay is basically the web needs the business model of the web, which was built on search, with AI needs to be reconsidered. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you what's going to be the next business model, but definitely that business model where actually content creator are willing to give all their data to Google in order for Google to send them traffic, this story is over. It doesn't work anymore, right? Mm-hmm. With that traffic, you are a content creator. With that traffic, you were able to cross-sell to your customer to get subscription. So you had your business model around that visibility. So you were very open to allow Google to track to scrape your data or to basically crawl your content. Therefore, that business model kind of worked, huh? Free content creation in exchange of traffic. Now, this doesn't work anymore. The latest data shows that the capacity of Google of sending traffic to content creators has been not reduced, but basically they're already providing answer on the Google interface. Less people are coming to your website. So the traffic story is partially over. The question is, what will be the next business model around it, right? And probably it's going to be a business model on, there needs to be some monetization somehow. Otherwise, we end up to the point that there is less content. And with the less content, everyone is losing. Consumer using, but also the models are using, because they need to train their model somewhere. So they need always fresh and new content. So overall, this is one area where it's a major industry transformation. So what would be that business model for the future? That's one area. The other area where I think that we will see major transformation is customer service. This can be, it's a low-hanging fruit. The latest voice model of OpenAI, but the other will catch up rather quickly, are really, really good. I don't know how many of you have ever experienced voice bot on a call center in the past. The experience was never great, was always clunky, it's never really great. I think now we reach a level that is great. And you can all try yourself by, when you go in the, if you go to the office or you travel, just have an OpenAI conversation on the car and you will experience a different level of quality. So this will stay. I think we will see a bit later the drastic reduction of call center agents, so real people. So don't expect that we're going to fire 50% of people tomorrow. This will take a long time. You need to implement those systems. You need to train them. You need to monitor them. So this is a long process, but this is the area of any industry customer support that will benefit out of AI. Mm. And the third area I see where we will see big improvement is productivity within large organizations. Mm-hmm. And there I see the biggest cultural challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, what AI is offering is less dependency. What AI is offering is we can do everything by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about how large companies are organized, if you work in a large company, you basically never do anything yourself. You always set up a project. You always ask someone else. You want to do something, then you set up a project. You call the IT people. They need to create a project around it. You need to find a budget, and you need to put together the team. And then if you need a business side, you need to put together the business colleagues. With AI, most of these dependencies are gone. You can do it yourself. You can sit down in front of a computer and have a conversation and try out a new business model and potentially generate the code and potentially test it on and simulating it and potentially get to a level that someone needs to put into production.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of doing it yourself, being very much not dependent on someone else, on one side is super powerful because people like I love it because I don't have to wait for someone else. I don't have to complain. Why can't you do it faster? You know. On the other side, it's rather scary because doing it yourself means you're fully in charge and accountable for it. And I'm not quite sure how many of us are ready to take that accountability.
Yeah. I heard maybe in Austria also we are a special case because I guess you need some sort of like entrepreneurial culture.
Complete.
To be willing to take this risk and accountability. And I just heard recently about a study that actually just 3% of adults in Austria are willing or are thinking about going self-employed or founding their own companies in the next 5 years, which I found was rather shocking from kind of more mindset culture. But that aside, I really love this idea of cultural topic because in every discussion with every executive, the topic of people skills and culture comes up as being the predictor of the speed of kind of value creation with AI. Would you subscribe to that as well?
Yeah. I think it provides a very powerful tool for people who basically don't want to wait for anyone else. I want something, I want it now. And I have no time to wait. And where we are right now is all about getting to a level that these things can be evaluated, right? Probably we're not to the point that I do something and I put it into production and it works. It's on millions of customers tomorrow. That's not the case. But to get to a level to say these things works, I'm confident this can go live for all my customers. I think we could be very good. on that. Mm. But again, it requires a different mindset. I'll give you a little example. I've been over the last years, we are discussing here in the bank, in the group, we're discussing about AI a lot. And a lot of people came to me and say, you know what? We would need to set up some educational program for our colleagues that they understand how to prompt and how to understand AI, what are the capability and so on. And when they came to me with this, my first instinctive answer was, sure, I will talk to HR and we will talk to some of our experts and we try to put together an educational program. But then one evening, I was going home and I was thinking about that. I said, no, if you open AI and you prompt AI to give you an educational program and you explain AI in which area are you interested on and what you would like to learn, AI most probably will create a much more precise and personalized and accurate program in probably 30 seconds that any HR department will be able to do.
Exactly. Right? Learning by using
it. This for me was a moment where I said, you see, we are stuck in the old mode. We are stuck in the mode that something is needed. Someone else needs to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm demanding it. And please, I'm waiting until they give it to me, right? No, AI to put you in a completely different. Do it yourself. Ask, prompt it. Maybe you need to prompt it 5 times before you get the right result, but you will probably get a better result than anyone will be able to give it to you. And I think this is fascinating.
When you look at the topic of this transformation and also value creation to get to the point where all these ideas and people who are willing to learn and who want to do things and who are maybe doing things already, our companies are expecting them to finally create visible value, tangible value. And now, you know, there's different sources of data and studies. Basically every day, you know, you hear how many companies are creating value and how many not. But, you know, round up, you could say there is maybe a third of companies who can say or who can claim already that they can measure the tangible value from AI projects and pilots. And where do you see yourself as a company belonging, rather to the, let's say, 30% front runners or rather the maybe a bit late bloomers yet or still in development?
No. We are not a front runner for very precise reason. Number one is, it depends in which area. In Esther Group, we have made a clear distinction from the very beginning. I think a couple of months after the OpenAI announcement, where we immediately realized that this thing is huge, we made this distinction strategically. We said we do two things. We work in two parallel streams. One is a stream that is dedicated to our employees internal, so productivity only, not customer involved, not customer facing. You know, allowing our colleagues to in different part of the bank to use AI to improve their work and to make it faster and more easier and so on. And every country in the group, you know, I'm responsible for the whole group, and every country in the group are very active on this. We have fantastic use cases and actually success story in Romania where they managed to put AI on the place where orchestrate all the inflow of messages and email and communication from customers. So and AI is basically understanding what the customer needs and redirecting all those messages to the right people. In the past, this was done by human being, right? They need to read the message, understand, okay, to solve the customer problem or to answer their question, I will redirect that request to that department. Now, AI is doing this. And I think this is, maybe it's boring. It sounds like, but it's a classical low-hanging fruit and it works perfectly. So we have an operational side and we have example like this in Czech Republic. We have example like this in Austria and so on and so on. That works very well.
And there is value to it. You can say, okay, we manage
resources. We can see the reduction of the effort on our side easily, right? We are now dealing with big integration projects and just looking at policies and comparing policies from two different companies and finding the gaps. That's exactly what AI can do fantastically.
It's crazy, yeah.
In the past, we were doing it manually. We had colleagues who read those hundreds of pages and need to highlight the gapping. Now we can do this easily with AI and it works great. Fantastic. Mm. This is the productivity part. That works. And there is a bunch of low-hanging fruit that we need to implement. We implement it, and we are going straight down that way. Customer facing means offering AI services to our customer. That's more delicate for two reasons. The first reason is most of the data we are dealing with are highly sensible data. It's your money. It's the information about your financial situation. So we need to make sure that AI is taking care about those information properly. We need to make sure that those information doesn't leave our environments. We need to make sure that the answer the AI provides to our customer are accurate. One thing is if you give me an inaccurate information about, I don't know, something you find on the internet, the weather tomorrow, the distance between Vienna and Salzburg, you know, who is the mayor of Salzburg? There is a difference if I tell your balance is 10,000 euro lower than it actually is, right? This is, you know, there is no space for error there, right?
Yeah. Mm.
So we have a certain care about that. And the second reason is that do not underestimate the fact that we are all very excited, but most of the people on the street out there still don't care about this stuff. I mean, we are early adopting this and we are super excited and we believe this will change the world. But there is a lot part of the world out there who don't care. My mom don't care. Probably my mom is not my target, right? And maybe we should not consider her. However, user acceptance is something that is still on the go, faster than any other technology. But we should always remember that voice assistant like Siri and Amazon Alexa, they've been launched, what was it, 10 years ago. And all of us bought those devices, spent a couple of hundred euro, put them at home, connected to the internet, set it up, asked a couple of jokes, had some fun and stopped using it the week after. We all did that, right? And maybe some of them were a bit more sophisticated in engineer style than we connected to our light. So we go home and say, switch on the light of the bathroom. And maybe that works if you manage to build that connection right. But that's it. And this was 10 years ago. And so those transformation, if you really want them mass market, takes time, right? I would not say generational, you know, in social societal transformation, generational means every 15, 20 years, roughly. Maybe this will take faster, but we are talking about not months, we are talking about years. And, you know, our customer here in the bank, we are a universal mass market bank in most of the market where we operate. Universal bank means we have customers from 5 years old to 95 years old. And so when I'm looking at my 11 million customer in the George platform across the region, I have a small 10, 20% who are very excited about AI, but I have an 80% that have other things to do than think about AI.
That's interesting, you know, because when I look at my son, who is obviously a George customer and has opinions about how well it works, mostly really well, but I would assume him expecting it to have, you know, voice enabled, whatnot, you know, and being very kind of from the interface, maybe different than your mom. So how do you deal with these, as you say, generational expectations for the user experience?
The voice, so enabling voice, enabling voice is a topic which is on my table regularly since more than 5 years. I have to admit, I had people come into my office 5, 6 years ago and tell me, people will interact with George by asking something. And my answer was very brutal is the wrong word, but very arrogant. And I'm excusing to everyone who came to my office and got that answer and say, look, maybe you're right. Once next time I go home with a Straßenbahn and I see someone asking, what's my balance on the phone like this? Then I will believe this is right. And then we're going to start looking into that. You know what I mean? I don't think your banking app will be the first app that you will interact by talking, unless you are in the car and you are alone and you need to make a payment whatsoever, right? This I can imagine, but that's relatively an edge case, right? And therefore we need to be a bit careful. I know it's fancy, and I think the likelihood that this is going to become relevant is high. But I would like to avoid. I remember when the beginning of Alexa, there was a bank, a German bank, who were piloting an Alexa skills, and that's the way it worked. Mm-hmm. So basically, you were going home and you say, "Hey Alexa, what is the show me the last three transactions on my current account?" And Alexa answer back, "Sure, no problem. Take your phone, open the banking app and authorize, and then I can have access to this data, and I tell you the last three transactions." And my point was, well, if you have to take your phone on your hand and then log in and authorize, then I'm already on the screen. I see exactly the three transactions.
Yeah.
We are not there yet. I'm not ruling out we're going to get there, but it takes a while. And we should not have any sense of urgency here, in my view.
Okay. Well put. And we will see where this will go and how the expectations will evolve. Because you know, I read recently that you can have of a startup that is offering kind of a service where you basically create your user interface on the go. So based on the data that comes from your conversations, you would. Me and you would see completely different user interface of the service based on whatever we interacted with the service before. So kind of fluid web design, or I don't know how to call it, honestly, if it has a name already. And I imagine this could be difficult for a bank. But, you were always very visionary with George and how you approach it. So I'm very curious how you're going to tackle that topic maybe in the future. You don't have to give me an answer now. We can talk in a few years again. Wrapping a bit up, so on where we are now and where what innovation would stay with us. If you were looking to the future, and it's a bit of a bigger topic now, you're responsible for the entire tech of an architecture of the bank, and you're responsible for these services. What do you see will be kind of the biggest change in the next, let's say, 4, 5, 6 years? Not too long, not too far. Where do you see the biggest changes and transformations for you, for your company, but maybe also, society-wide?
On the company side, I see. So on the banking industry side, and I'm not talking about Esther, I'm talking about large incumbent and a multinational bank. I see AI having a huge contribution about. Modernizing the legacy systems, modernizing a legacy system of a bank of our size is a very expensive exercise. And we are all looking forward for the moment where AI can make that work, maybe not 100% automatic, but let's say 50-60%, so it's not so expensive anymore and we can do the transformation. I am expecting in the next 3 to 5 years, we are on a stage that you can really do some migrations from some legacy solutions, which are very complex, into much more modern technology without blocking the whole organization for 6 months or something like that. So that's one side. The other side in the banking industry I see is that advisory, which is something we are currently offering mainly to our customer who are visiting our branches and talking with our colleagues in the front office. They receive very, very well fine-tuned personal advice, how to manage their financial situation, how to improve that financial situations, how to plan for the future. At the moment, we're able to offer that service to a limited amount of our customer base, roughly 20-30% of them. The other, for whatever reason, because they don't want to go to the branches or because they're not interested to go to the branches, whatever, they are almost on their own. Of course, we offer tools and services, but that level of advice is that we do personally in the front office is not replicatable. And I'm here not talking about sophisticated stuff. I'm just saying that level of awareness and dialogue and discussion, it was impossible in the in the past way of building solutions. But I think with AI, I think we can get closer to simulate that advice. So one of the things we are focusing in right now is to how can we scale our advice capability to all our customers, not only to the one that have a personal advisor and not only to the one who are willing to go to the branches, to everyone, including younger people that don't want to go. And they don't even think we have a branch, right? It's not in their mindset to visit a branch. They're having the app. They believe their bank is in their app and they want to get a great service out of the app. I think AI gives us a new opportunity. We're investing quite a lot of money in that building digital advisory. That's the other area. And the third area is about basically using also AI to find the right language to talk to our customers. I think one of the things that incumbent bank, large bank, has not been doing great over the last decades is finding the right language for their especially the younger generation. And if you think about it, and this is a topic which is really, I really care deeply about it. If you think about it, large banks across the world, let's say in Europe, they have been trying to convince young people to invest money in their future, put money on the side, and not spend everything when they're young, start making small investment for their pension.
Building wealth.
Early enough, building wealth, exactly. And we fail dramatically. We fail. We never really manage, right? And then social media started. TikTok started, and if you see, there are millions of fintech influencers, and they are, and actually, in that world, you get the good and the bad too, right? You get a lots of scam, and you get a lots of promise, and you get a lots of people who convince you to invest money because you want to get rich fast, time the market, all these things. So there are the bad stuff. But they're also the good stuff, good people who really does proper education. They explain things in the language that our future customers or our young customer today, Generation Z and all the other, will listen to. And I think for us, this is an opportunity. AI will give us a chance to draft our content from a professional angle and from the fact that we are a regulated entity, so we are not scamming people. We are very secure. Try to get that new dialogue with those new generations because it's very important. Look, I always say to the team, every customer we are convincing to do a little investment at the age of 20 is a success. And this person will say thank you to us. Will say thank you to us when he's going to be 60 and 65. It's a huge mission. And I think we need to be competitive there in that mission with our products. We need to get our prices in a way that they are very competitive. We need to get the right language and we need to get the right argumentation. So we are not there yet, but we are deploying a lot of effort and management attention to make it right.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing this. And I'm very glad that you take this very seriously. And I will just say, my son, he's 13. He's been on my neck for 2 years. When he's finally going to get his first investment phone? When can he start investing? So they are getting younger. And just, you know, having an offer for him in his, or for the parents in this case, but something where they can also start younger and start learning about this. Very, very important. I sign up on that. So looking to the future, Mauri, I ask everybody in my podcast, are you an optimist, a pessimist, or maybe a realist? How do you look into our joint technology-enabled future?
I'm an optimist mainly because, as I said at the beginning, we are in the beginning of a big industrial transformation, which normally such a sized, so big industrial transformation comes along with huge benefit and huge opportunity, but also high risk. However, you cannot split the two things, right? The more powerful the transformation is, the more the negative options are available. So we need to take it as part of the cake. That's part of the cake. And you have to take them. So I'm totally optimistic about that. Therefore, we have to play. So I'm optimistic, but I'm realistic to the sense that we need to play with the cards we have. We need to make the best out of the technology we have at our hands. We need to make sure that we are using it in the right way and with the right attitude. And yes, there will be a lots of misuse all around. There will be bubble on that, which is normally bubbles have been very healthy. Because a bubble, yes, some people will lose some money on a bubble, but it will let a lot of dust, which is around this topic, settle down, and only the good thing will stay. And I'm just focusing on the opportunity, and I think the opportunity are huge. So I'm on that angle, I'm totally optimistic.
Very good. Thank you so much. Everybody was an optimist so far. I have three more episodes to go. I really am curious, will there be any single person who is looking pessimistically? But something tells me we here interested in the topic of AI do look rather to the opportunities. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing also your visionary thoughts and experience. I'm pretty sure they are very, very valuable for our communities. An euch alle anderen, vielen Dank, dass ihr dabei wart. Wir hören uns in 2 Wochen. Dazwischen bin ich ein bisschen im Norden, im hohen Norden in Stockholm. Ich werde darüber berichten, was sich dann dort so alles mit AI und Co. tut. Macht es gut, passt auf euch auf und bis bald. Tschüss.